Welcome to Desert Island Trek. Each week, we ask our guests to pick 8 items from Star Trek episodes, movies, and soundtracks to take with them to a desert island.
This week, we're absolutely delighted to be joined by Abby Summer, who is from Wisconsin, the dairy capital of the United States of America, who is the co-host of the First Fly podcast. And Abby would describe herself as a hardcore Trekkie since childhood, a reading teacher, a mom, a camper, and a fan of fruity candy and cheese. It is quite possibly the most beautiful description I think I've ever heard of anyone, Abby. I have to understand, what exactly do you classify now as fruity candy? I need to understand this.
Okay, so let's preface with I'm allergic to tree nuts, which is not peanuts, but like macadamia nuts, almonds, cashews, pecans, all that jazz. And that kind of stuff turns up in a lot of sweets that have chocolate in them, right? Mm-hmm. And it makes me stop breathing. So I really enjoy breathing. So I have a huge sweet tooth and I tend to lean towards things that I know are very safe, which would be like Skittles, Starburst, licorice. Jelly beans are like a really big thing for me. I really enjoy jelly beans. All that stuff that like most people leave at the bottom of whatever candy dish or bowl because they're like, I'd rather have the chocolate. Well, I'd rather have the fruity stuff. I'd rather, you know, have that explosion of something that will let me keep breathing. And you know what? I've found that I really enjoy the sour bend of it, which helps me because, like I said, I'm a reading teacher and I work with kids who are 5 to 13 and sour is a big thing for them. So when I can match them toe to toe on eating like sour gummy worms or Warheads or something, I get a little street cred in the school. So it's a benefit. And I breathe. So, you know, that helps too.
Breathing is useful.
When I was a kid and I'm like, you know, when I grow up, I am going to just buy all the candy I want whenever I want to. I kind of never gave that up. Like I do have a candy shelf in my house. I'm okay with that. It's a good vice to have. It's not the worst one out there.
Mike, I'm looking at you because you're to ask the first question. Remember we had this discussion before?
Yes, and I was
pausing for dramatic effect.
Yes,
Mike.
That's exactly. This is
really
why...
thinking about jelly beans.
To be fair, I'm thinking about Haribo because about an hour away from me, they've just opened up a massive Haribo store.
Oh, God.
And I'm now really tempted to go and take an hour's drive just to go Haribo shopping. Because, you know, there's something about Haribo golden bears that are just...
Those are really good.
And they're so Moorish as well. But once you eat a whole packet and then you realize you're eating a whole packet of golden bears. So, Abby, how did you first get into Star Trek?
Well, my dad is... just kind of a general sci-fi fan. He enjoys everything in the genre, Star Trek, Star Wars, Doctor Who, Dune, all of that kind of stuff. And growing up in the 80s, my house just kind of always had that hanging around. And I always enjoyed the fact that I could tell that this was something that grownups thought about. And I always was intrigued by like what grownups were thinking, because as a kid, you get a lot of that. Yeah, you know, you'll get it when you're older. Well, I wanted to get it now. And so I always liked watching the sci-fi with my dad. And as we grew up, the two of us found that we both leaned that way, whereas my mother and my sister didn't. So a lot of times they'd go and do something, we'd have our little night. And he introduced me to TNG with, believe it or not, The Royale as my first episode, which is... Yeah, it's a doozy. I mean, the spinning door in the middle of nowhere and all that. But I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I was so intrigued by all of the pieces. I thought Data was incredible. I'm like, who's this guy? Because like without him, they were kind of in trouble. And I just really liked it. And this, of course, was the 80s. And as we've said, I live in the Midwest. Star Trek got preempted by baseball, football, whatever sport happened to be on. But I started catching all of the reruns. I started watching on purpose, asking my dad, hey, can we put this on? I was the queen of the VCR with the tape that would be the extended play. And it would be like, okay, for 8 hours, somewhere in this 8 hours, the game will end. And I will get the Star Trek. So I would set up VCRs and like have it. And I just kind of immediately felt an affinity to it. And then by the time I was in middle school, I had a best friend who was also completely into it. And we just fell down the obsession rabbit hole. We had figurines, we had books, we had drawings, we had clothes. We would watch the new episodes as they drop and we would write it down our notes in a notebook and then call each other and talk about it afterwards, because this was pre, you know, internet, all that. But I still have some of those notebooks with our like first notes of what we said. I know, it's so amazing. Like, when Voyager first landed and we got blue alert, I have a notebook written in blue pen in giant letters, blue alert. And I just, they're artifacts of my youth. And I found that, like, as I grew into Trek. And I was, you know, coming into it when everything was live. We had, you know, TNG, DS9, Voyager, right into Enterprise. Enterprise was going off on their mission when I went off to college. So it just kind of felt like it was growing with me. And I found that I'm not necessarily the most religious person, but I found a lot of moral and ethical guidelines in Trek that really spoke to me and really helped me on this path. And it really gave me the lessons and kind of the linchpins of who I was by watching Trek. And you know what? It's fun. It's beautiful. And there's so many people out there who love it, that it was just a community. I felt like I found my tribe, and that has only gotten bigger and better.
I'm just curious, Abby, just like, say, I, like, we all kind of grew up in that kind of same era of, like, you having to wait week on week for episodes and things like that. And with the exception of the, you know, the DS9 overrun to the Next Generation, same with Voyager, do you find that kind of, you miss that era over, say, the current era, where, like, the episodes come up, but it's very easy to access everything, whereas in the old days, it was, as you said, VHS tapes and things like that. It was a bit of a simpler era, wasn't it? Like, if you didn't record it on TV, you couldn't really see it until it kind of came back around again. Like, which do you prefer, the kind of the era of all the easy access to everything, which is, say, current, or the days of having to, you know, wait for it to kind of come on, the anticipation that that brought?
That's a big question. And the answer kind of is yes. I like the old way because I really enjoyed the theorizing and the discussion and the analyzing that came with the having to wait. But I also really enjoy the serialization that we have now. And I feel like serialization offers a different type of storytelling, and it's harder to drop in and drop out of things. And I kind of want both. And I, because I really enjoy the bigger stories, the longer ones. And I enjoy the fact that if I have, you know, 20 minutes, I can pop something on my phone and then pick it up later wherever. That has been a game changer. As someone with young kids who doesn't have a lot of uninterrupted time, if I'm doing a rewatch or I'm prepping for a pod or something, I can do it in small chunks wherever. And that is a big thing. But I also really miss that anticipation of everybody sitting down at the exact same time, watching, finding it, having a week, and then sometimes going, "Ooh, I saw this one. Did you get it?" "No, it was the baseball game, those stupid Brewers," which is the local team around here. Just, they play, wait a minute, 11 innings and what? And I missed the ending. But then it's that's a community building thing too. Like, "Oh, I got it. Do you want my VHS tape?" All this, that. I do miss that part. But it's also funny because, like, you go through and you realize I missed some episodes of Voyager when they were on for years because I just didn't have the access. And yeah. Dragon's Teeth actually ended up being the last episode of Voyager I watched. And everyone was telling me, "Oh, this is so good. It's so amazing. It's the best episode. We've got this cool bad guy. It's got all this backstory." And it was built up in my head for years. And then I watched it and I was like, "Well, that was good." But it wasn't going to live up to it because I'd had years of anticipation of finishing my Voyager watch with this episode that I was finally going to get to see. And I just don't think anything could live up to that. So that's good and bad. So I enjoy the fact now that we are more instantly connected to the community as well. That's kind of fun. But I miss, like, the old school cons and zines and all that. But I think maybe that's because I'm old. So I don't know. I pretty much will take Trek however I can get it. I enjoy that it is easier now, but yeah, there's something about setting up the double VCR even to, like, dub my tape to my friend's tape so that she could have the tape. And that was a lot of work. It was more than just a couple buttons on a screen. That had cords.
Those were the days. I used to love those days. And then it's also, you always, the little tab broke on the VHS and you got a bit of tape over it.
Yeah.
In some ways, I miss those days, but at the same time, I don't.
Well, it was nice because you could always have it, too. Yeah. You know, physical media now, people still have it. And obviously, after everything with Prodigy, you realize you need it. Yeah. But there is something about being able to look like and say, "This is my wall of my Star Trek stuff," and being able to hold it and touch it. I mean, that's a very human kind of thing. I mean, Picard touched the Phoenix, right? So we know that touching things makes it more real.
Mike, I'm looking at you here.
I thought you were doing the next bit.
No, you did the next bit. You asked. Sorry.
There'll be a lot of editing in this episode.
Abby, you can clearly see this is the very first time we've actually recorded this. So you're actually our very first guest on this new show. Like, so what we're
I'm
kind
very
of
honored.
What we said to watch them. So, Mike, you ask the first question, and then you also ask for the first choice, and then I move into the second question, second choice, things like that.
Okay. So I just want to double check, because obviously you've got the what eight items from Star Trek episodes, yes, movie, or soundtracks have you selected?
Yes.
Fine. And then it's obviously all of those plus what book? Fine.
So, yeah, no, so yeah. So basically, you've asked Abby the first question, which was how did you get first again? Star Trek. Then the next question is what's your first pick of what we take to the island with you? And then we'll go from there.
I gotcha. Right. And action. So, Abby, what is the first item that you would bring with you to a desert island?
Okay, now I would just like to preface this with I did not put them in order from 1 to 8. These are the 8 in general. They are equal and on par with each other. So this is not like if I only had to go down to 1, I'm not sure this would be the one. That might kill me to have to pick just 1. Let me tell you, I have 7 versions of this list in general.
Oh, Abby, but we forgot to tell you like that at the very end, you are actually being made to pick 1. Like that's absolutely, yeah, we decided not to tell you, but we're telling you now because you know, that's because we're so great. Like, yeah, I intentionally left that question off the list I sent you because I wanted to land it on you and all the other guests. Don't tell Chris when it's his turn as well that he's going to ask this question.
I won't, but whew, okay, I'm going to have to marinate on that one as we go. Good thing I can multitask. All right. But the first thing I picked, and this one I have to say is a lot because I have 2 young daughters. They're currently 8 and 5, and I am really, really loving sharing Trek with them. And if I got shoved on a desert island without them, you better believe that I would have to bring some things that made me feel like they were there with me. And the first thing I picked was the Subspace Rhapsody soundtrack, because since that dropped a few months ago, we have watched it at least once a week in this household. They can sing every single word. When we're driving in the car, that's what they ask for. In fact, this morning, and I swear it's some sort of, you know, Great Bird of the Galaxy looking down on me, I'm in bed and my 5-year-old is in her bed singing as loudly as she can, "Hail the Klingons, hurrah," to wake us up. And I love musicals in general. I loved this musical. Is it like going to win Tony's? No, it's not. But it is joyous. It is fun. It is singable. It is everything I hoped that a Star Trek musical could be. I would have taken, you know, a 2-hour musical, you know, to give us an intermission with some beautiful music and then come back for the second part. This has been so joyous and so omnipresent in my life. And you know what? If I'm on a desert island, every once in a while, you're going to want to let it go and like have some feelings and sing really loud and get some of those emotions out. I mean, I'm stuck by myself. No one's going to hear me. I mean, I don't have a terrible voice, but I'm not singing in front of audiences. So a desert island is a perfect place to like bust out into Laan's big feelings and hail those Klingons and try my dance moves and all that.
So this, Abby, the question is, which one is the kind of the top song on the soundtrack for the family, for you, for the girls? Is there deep, I all have the same favorites, or no, have you got different? Oh, interesting.
We all have different favorites. I'll leave me for last. My youngest one, she really loves the big finale where they get all of the everybody involved. She loves the Klingons. She told me the other day at recess at school, she was singing about making your blood scream. And the teacher was like, "What are you singing?" And she's like, "It's Star Trek." And I'm like, "Oh, I need to send your teacher a message about making people's blood scream." Like, ooh, but she loves that one. And she knows she'll sing it. Like I said, she sang it to wake up this morning. She'll sing it randomly when she's making a puzzle. Like she just really finds heart in that one. And she loves the big finale. And she'll always end with her arms up, like doing the big move. So that's her favorite. But she also, she really likes Una. So she always calls it the floating song. So she likes that one too, which was my probably least favorite on the soundtrack when it first came out. But now that I've listened to it a zillion times, and especially because of her, I've found a lot more in that song, especially with the lyrics and all of that. So that has risen up. My husband says he likes Spock's song, which is funny because my girls don't like that one because they don't like Spock being sad. They don't like him being emotional. Like, they'll watch it when we watch the episode, but it's not the one that they ever request to like sing in the car. They don't like it. They've also watched Those Old Scientists. They don't like it when he smiles. They know Spock is supposed to be contained. And when he's talking about big feelings, they're just like, yeah, this isn't Spock. But my husband likes that one. I think it's very much in his range as well. So that helps there. My older one, she back and forth. She'll go on binges. Like, she was on Keep Us Connected for a while with Uhura. She really likes the big ending with that one.
Yep.
But she also really likes Status Report now. She's enjoying the rhymes, and she likes that it does technobabble, which I can't argue with. I mean, that's a good song. And I mean, Hampered and Dampeners, like that's not quite a rhyme, but that's brilliant. Like, the lyrics in that one are brilliant. And for me, that's hard. I think it depends on mood, but it might be Keep Us Connected still. I enjoy that, where you feel like no matter where I'm going, I'm good on my own. I've got enough to do what I got to do for everybody else. And that's a really good and empowering message. So, and it's fun because it starts out so slow and then builds, which is always a great part of musicals.
I love Status Report. Status Report is still my favorite one. And to be fair, I love I'm the X as well. I think that's a great song. So
they're all good.
They're all great, yeah. They're all brilliant. The only one I don't like is the Connect to Your Truth. Number four.
See, that I don't one's like pretty that fun one. Though.
Yeah, it's just
that's
I can't,
old school.
It is old school, but yeah, I don't know if it's because I don't think Paul Wesley's got a particularly good voice. No disrespect to Paul Wesley.
Oh, Mike, you awful man. If we ever have Paul Wesley on the show, I'm going to immediately play him a clip.
I'll tell him. Don't you worry. I'll tell him. Mate, I don't like your singing voice. It's not very good. Says the expert singer over here.
Abby, if you were to pick an era of Star Trek, or say like a starship or a space station to live on, like in the time period, what would it be and why?
All right. So I have to say that I probably want to live on the D. Like, it just seems like the most comforting. That's what I kind of grew up on. All that carpet, all of that, you know, hotel in space. They kind of always come through it in the end. But there's a part of me that's always living on the NX-01 too. I really love Enterprise. I resonate with Enterprise. I enjoy the fact that you can see Enterprise as kind of the connective piece of where we are and where we might be going with Trek. And you feel like the NX-01, you could walk on and kind of sort of understand what a bunch of the stuff does, because it's that in between
right
piece.
There in front of you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it's very tactile too. And it's one of those ships where the colors are cold, but it feels warmer because it feels more realistic almost. Like everything is so shiny and perfect on the D, which is why I feel like this would be comforting. Like, I have to admit, when I can't sleep sometimes, I put on like the background noise of the D bridge. And like, see, I'm so glad that you're nodding with this too. I am not the only one. There's millions of people who've listened to this, but it's comforting. Whereas I think the NX-01 would be the most fun. The D would be the most comforting. So if you're going to shove me on an island, let me hang out and relax.
I find Voyager's warp core is better to listen to sleep.
Maybe.
It's got a slightly higher tone to it, that's all.
Warp cores are hard for me sometimes because I feel like I get in that rhythm and it's good, but then it wakes me up sooner because it's more rhythmic. It's anyways. Who knows? I'm glad it works for you. Please sleep by any warp core that works.
I think it's the carpeting on the Enterprise D, isn't it? Like, it's like even Captain Picard or Admiral Picard references it in Picard season 3 when he says it's the thing he misses, and like it's very much that case. Like, you know, like whenever you see it, you they're going, I could easily jump on the floor there and just sleep in a doorway. I'd be absolutely fine to kind of do that.
I don't want the triangle pillow though. Like, they have all those weird triangle pillows. Yeah. Like, that I can do without, but. That's,
and also, the pillows look like they're made from, I don't know, they look hard. They don't look soft and squishy like most normal pillows or cushions. They literally look like they're made out of felt.
You'd have a neck ache when you're done.
Yeah.
Although strangely, the only thing I think of when you said, or when the triangle pillows, Abby, is the episode of DS9 when Cassidy Yates leaves the bed and Sisko just knocks his own pillow away to pull hers closer so he can smell it. Which I think is just a wonderful little scene. Abby, what is your second choice for what you take to the island?
Okay, so again, I kind of did these in chunks, so I'm going to do some more music, and anyone who's ever heard me talk about Star Trek knows I really, really enjoy Star Trek music, and I surprised myself putting this list together where three of my eight choices end up being music, but I'm like, you know what? If I'm on a desert island, yeah, I'm going to want to have different, you know, tones, different feelings, different things to go into, and then I started thinking about how often the music is the background of my life, and it really, really is. I mean, I have 7,000 playlists. This is my Sleepy Trek playlist. This is my Energizing Trek playlist. This is my Best of Voyage. Yeah, I'm that kind of nerd and that kind of organizer and obsessive. But when I started thinking about it, I was like, you know, I really need a movie. I need a movie in here that's going to give me like that whole picture of here's your theme that goes throughout, but here's the whole picture. So it kind of grows. And that First Contact theme is chill inducing every single time. And I'm going to assume that on my island, I have really good headphones, because if I'm listening and watching this stuff, I have some sort of electricity and stuff too. When you listen to that on headphones and you get like the full immersive experience and there's no other sound, you got your noise canceling on, it is just perfection. And that has some of that scary tense of the Borg in there, but it's got that beautiful harmonious theme, and the actual cut First Contact on there is probably in my top five of all Star Trek music of all time, and we'll get to more of those when we get to my next choice. But that one, it's just everything you want a piece of Star Trek music to be, and I've heard so many versions of it and they're all amazing. Yeah. And so I thought to myself, okay, if I have to bring a movie, this is the one. I thought about Generations because then I got the sound effects that went with it, but yes, I'm thinking to myself, right, what am I going to do with sound effects on a desert island? This is the one. This is the one I go back to. And I like the movie. It's not my favorite movie, but it's very, very high up there. And I just like how much heart is behind it. And it feels both very human and very Star Trek at the same time. And that's one that it's been on repeat since it came out, what, 20 some years ago. So that one had to come up.
I have two questions for you then, Abby. One is, do you remember the first time you saw First Contact or heard the soundtrack, whichever one came first? I'm assuming seeing the movie came first. Do you remember what it was like hearing that music for the first time?
I cried. I was in high school and I was with a whole bunch of nerdy Star Trek friends in uniform when I still had a uniform that like fit appropriately. Because let me tell you, uniforms are not made for busty women. I'm sending that out there to the universe for everybody. Please, this is why I own a million t-shirts. Because
or busty uniform, men.
Yes, that too. So I remember there was like 10 of us and we went, and it was the first showing on a Saturday. We couldn't get there on Friday. Longer. It was the first showing. So it's like, I don't know, noonish on a Saturday. Here we are waiting for the movie theater to open. We're in uniform. I remember watching the movie. I didn't even eat. Like, I didn't even pretend. I was sitting there on the edge of my seat, just like watching the whole time. And that's theme. Okay, first of all, when you have the whole like Borg eye thing, that gave me the heebie-jeebies. But the rest of it, like, I remember hearing it and going, this is beautiful. And the opening credits are amazing visually and music. And my little heart was so happy. And that last scene with the actual First Contact with the Vulcans landing and the handshake. And then when they're walking away and then they say goodbye to Lily and then she sees the flash, I lost it. I'm just crying, tears streaming down my face. But then I look next to me and here's my friend who I said I obsessed and wrote the notebooks with. She's crying. There's other people on the other side and they're like trying to be tough and they're like, I'm not crying. I'm like, yes you are, this is perfect, we've been waiting for this. And I remember walking out and like trying to wipe away my tears, and we're just going and talking over each other and rambling about how amazing this is. And the two teenagers, and I'm a teenager at this point too, but the two teenagers that come in to clean the theater are just shaking their heads at us, and I'm like, I don't care. Like, I have never been the one who cared if somebody else thought that I was a nerd for loving Star Trek, because I will proudly embrace that. Like, yep, Yes, I am. And you know what? If you watched and thought and listened about it, you would be a fan too.
Abby, the last question I'm going to ask you about the First Contact soundtrack, and you know now I'm going to ask this question, is which is your favorite of all the bits of music? Is it obviously the, well, hang on a second, actually, I'll make it easier. I'm discounting the main theme and I'm discounting the end theme. What is your favorite track then on this First Contact soundtrack?
That's really hard. Okay, let's see. No, I'm gonna think about this. So there is the Ooby Dooby was the first thing that came to mind, but that's not really the answer. But I do appreciate that, like, sometimes Magic Carpet Ride or Ooby Dooby come on in like the real world just in general, and you're just like your little
Different
Star Trek
problems,
smile in there.
Mrs.
Exactly. You know what? I think, oh, and I'm blanking on what the name of it is. The one where after Picard has his big old meltdown freak out and he smashes the ships and he's talking to Lily. And I can't
Yes.
remember what it's called, but that one, because it's got all that emotion and then there's some resolution in it. And it's got little bits of the theme and it's got that little bit of that the Lily's theme that's been going throughout there too. And
Yeah.
you also hear him working through it in the music behind it. And that's such, I mean, you don't see Picard lose it like that very often. So when you see that, and then later on, when you watch it again and you've obsessively listened to the soundtrack a thousand times, you realize that that music is coming in behind and it's growing with his understanding of how he's processing what he's feeling and coming off of that ledge where he just completely lost it. In front of someone he doesn't really know that well, who doesn't understand the full complexity of what this situation is for him. And it's complex music too. It layers upon layers upon layers. And it's comforting. Like that, I would put that on after I had like an emotional moment because it feels comforting.
So, on that note, who is your favorite character?
Okay, you guys ask hard questions, and maybe this is just
We
me
never said it
going,
was going to be easy.
Yeah,
oh, I know.
there's a disclaimer on our form somewhere, Abby, that says, yo, this is not going to be easy.
Well, and I feel like it's mutable too, you know? Like I don't ever want to judge a character completely until we are done seeing that entire character's story. And there's so much Trek that's on right now. Where I feel like there are some characters that have potentials to like rise in my rankings, depending on how the rest of their story goes. Like I put Saru on my list, and I put on here, and I hedged because I cheated, and I don't really care. That I don't really have one that I can say, yes, this is my character. This
Oh,
is
hang on a
who I
second, Abby. I need to check the rule book here and see if this is acceptable or not. No, unfortunately, rule 4, subsection 2, paragraph 3 says no. We have to pick one. I'm only kidding you, of course.
I know. Well, okay. Here's my top four, right? And I say I really like Saru, Tuvok, T'Pol, and Beverly Crusher. And it's funny because I tend to go towards either super logical, because I don't feel like I necessarily have that in me as much, but I wish I did. Like I wish I controlled emotions better than I do. I really resonate with Vulcans and them having emotions, but controlling them and trying to think out logically. Do I think it's the best strategy? No, but I wish I had more of it in myself. And I, like I said, I love Enterprise. T'Pol, she's so critical and she doesn't get enough credit. I mean, Archer did amazing, wonderful things, but he would not have done that and the Federation would not have founded if T'Pol had not been the person right there next to him. Moderating, encouraging, explaining, pushing, holding him back when need be. And she is such an unbelievably complex character. And I really like that. And we'll talk more about my own pod later, but the looking at her character arcs and growth and all of that has been joyous for me. And every time I watch something with T'Pol in it that's focused on her, I find more layers. And I know Jolene Blaylock did not have the best time in Star Trek in general, but dang, did she hit it out of the park. And that woman can face act amongst the best of them out there. It is amazing. And that kind of goes along with how I love Tuvok. Like, I like those people who are very controlled and you have to watch really carefully, but you still know what they're thinking and feeling just by the tiniest little bits. And I love Tim Russ. Like, every time you hear him talk, you just want to hang out with him. Like, the man is amazing. And I think Tuvok and T'Pol being full Vulcans and full crew members just adds a layer to stories and adds a layer to how things are perceived that I think are really valuable. And it's an alien perspective, but it's not too alien because we're used to the Vulcans. They've been around for as long as Star Trek's been around. And I like how it oftentimes presents a different picture or an alternate idea. And both of them do that so well. And they have so much respect for the people around them and from the people around them that I kind of hope that's something that I emulate in my own life as well. And then we're going to throw in Beverly Crusher, who I remember as a kid watching her and going, okay, I want to be like her when I grow up. She is massively smart, brave as all get out, proficient in so many areas. She's a great friend. She's a mom and still doing all this other stuff. She has fun. She has hobbies. Like, she does theater, which is always something that I have enjoyed. And like, I just, and when we watched Attached and she said she always has like that biting sarcastic remark in her head, but she doesn't say it out loud. Okay, that's kind of me too. So I watched that and I was, I think 13 or 14, I can't remember exactly, but going, she does that too? Oh my God, that's me. And I really appreciate her whole arc too. And some of the work that she did in season 3 of Picard is some of the most emotionally powerful work that we have seen in Trek. And I love that character. I want to see more of that character. And I want to see more of that character happy because, man, that woman has been through some stuff. And I want her and her two boys to all be together and just like have dinner one night. Like, just have that moment of, you know, get Jack, get Wesley, get Bev, sit down, have a good meal and just talk and let her just be. Because if I still want to grow up and be like Beverly Crusher, because she is such a badass in so many ways, and that's delightful. And then I can't leave out Saru. I mentioned him before. I feel like he's the one I resonate the most with in New Trek. And I really enjoyed how when he first was introduced, he was anxious. You know, he has this underlying, always like kind of crawling under his skin fear. And as someone who deals with a lot of anxiety in general, oh man, did that, I felt seen. And to see him grow and come through this, and you know, he's made some mistakes. He stood on the bridge of Discovery and told people off that he shouldn't be, because he's still realizing how to deal with all of this emotional stuff. But he's so smart and he's so loyal and he's so willing to give of himself and brave. He left his planet, maybe never going back, knowing he probably would never see his family again. And he'd only get to know what's going on there tangentially. Wow. That for someone with anxiety to leave everything that you find comforting and familiar and to go out because you felt such a powerful drive to explore and know what else is out there. That really resonates with me too. Like I want to keep learning. I always said, give me as much information about stuff as possible. I want to take it in. I want to absorb it. I want to figure it out. And I see a lot of that in Saru. And I love his leadership style. Like, he's very calm, but inclusive when he talks to people. And he's willing to change his mind, willing to listen to other people, willing to put himself out there. And I cannot wait to see what happens with him next. And oh, his romance with Tarina melts my heart. Like, the two of them together are so sweet and so earnest with each other. It's a beautiful relationship and it's been done so well. I really, really, really hope that Disco season 5 has some resolution for them and that they can be happy and wearing absolutely gorgeous costumes for the rest of their lives. Cause his Kaminar outfit and Tarina's closet, I would live in if I could. Her stuff is impeccable. So they can get married and have the most fabulous, gorgeous largest wedding ever, and then live and be happy as well. So that was a huge answer for who's your favorite character, because I cheated. So
but it was a good answer. That's
Well, thank you. I feel like there's 900 plus episodes / movies of Trek out there. You're gonna find people who resonate with you in different ways and in different parts of your life. And I really have enjoyed growing with some of these characters as I've gotten older, and finding new characters that speak to me in different ways as I've gotten older and, you know, had my own family and had my own adventures and done those kind of things. So that's my quad of favorites for you.
So what's the next item on your list?
Okay, so the next item, this is my last bit of music for here. And I picked, speaking of Saru again, Discovery Season 3 soundtrack. And so as I'm making my list of eight, I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'm going to try to get a little bit of as much as I possibly can. So like if I picked a soundtrack, I probably didn't pick an episode. And I'm trying to balance it. And I didn't get any TOS in there because there were things that just edged it out. But that's in my, if somebody's throwing me like a chest to survive for another month, there's a bunch of TOS in there. But Discovery Season 3 soundtrack, I think this is massively underrated out there in the world. There are so many incredibly good pieces of music on this. Like I said, I have playlists for all sorts of things, and one is just Trek faves. And this one has like six cuts from this album on it. It is so good. It's got Hugh's Log, which is the piano one that he originally, as he's going around and talking about them jumping into the future and the crew having PTSD and not being okay, it's playing. It's such a good piece of music. It is now the end credits for season four because it is such a beautiful piece of music. And it's got that drive that you feel there's energy behind it, but there's emotion and you feel kind of anxious, but by the end, you're kind of calm. Like, that's a gorgeous cut of music. It's also got the duet for piano and cello on there that Stamets and Adira play. That's a lullaby for my girls now. Like, I put that on to calm them down before bed. It's so simple, but it's so beautiful in there. I absolutely love that one. I love the piece called It's You, Saru, where Michael is telling Saru that, they see, I know the names of these ones because this is how much I love this album. I know the track names. She tells him he should be the captain. It's you. You got it. It's the culmination in music of their friendship. And their friendship is one of the parts of Discovery I like the most, because I feel like it's a really well-portrayed, honest friendship where they go through highs and lows, but they still care about each other so much. They are found family. They're the kind of friends that will, at the end, do anything for each other. Even if they have hurt each other and disappointed each other, they always come back together. And that moment in music is right there when she says, yeah, it's you. You need to be the captain for this one. So there's that.
Abby, the question you know I'm going to ask you now about the Discovery Season 3 soundtrack again is going to be, which one is your favorite?
I got it. I saved my one this time because I knew that would come. It is, because there's one on here that's in my top five of all Star Trek music in general, and it's Georgiou's Goodbye. Oh, that piece of music.
Yeah.
I could listen to it on repeat probably for days on end and not get sick of it. It is so beautiful, and it has so many layers of all the different themes and the cello that runs through that. It speaks to my soul. Like, it's just so gorgeous. And I love that you can hear again their relationship, their friendship in this music, the love they have, the toughness, the opening up of it. And it all kind of just layers and goes into the big ending where she does step through the Guardian, or Carl, if we're being familiar. And you get that swell, and you can see and her in your mind. And when you watch this, and you've obsessed over this piece of music as much as I have, the scene is a billion times better. She takes a breath and you hear those trumpets in the back, her emperor theme, right? She takes a breath, she steals herself, she steps through, and you hear that da-da with the trumpets, and then it cuts and you're just like, it makes you take a breath. It's that good. And speaking back to First Contact music, it parallels a lot when Lily sees the D flash away and you have that just kind of almost moment of silence. That's in the end of this piece too. And it is everything that Discovery Music can be. And I absolutely will defend that piece till my dying days, because it is one of the most gorgeous pieces of Star Trek music that's out there.
So, Abby, in terms of then all the different series we have, the easiest question of all is going to be, which is your favorite?
Okay, so my comfort series is TNG, because I really grew up on it, and it just, I can, all those titles, I could probably write them down, because, yeah, again, obsessive nerd. I could probably go from 1 to 177, 78, depending how you count it, and hit probably 85% of them in order, because that's how much I watched them as a kid growing up. And they just, I know what's coming. I know all the beats. I know the sounds. So that's where I go to when I just need to be comforted. But really, my heart lies with Enterprise. Like, that series defined me and sat with me in a really important part of my life when I was first becoming an adult out in the world, exploring myself and a new place to be and a new way to be. And there's so much in there that is still so relevant to now. And I always say Enterprise lives in the gray. There are episodes you watch there that you can argue with three other people, you all have different opinions, and you're all right, and you're also all wrong. So it's there's so much there that people just kind of glossed over, because there's definitely early 2000s in there too, but there's so much there that is so good and speaks to how we are now and how I hope we're going. So that's that. And I have to give just a special tiny shout out to Prodigy, because of watching it with my girls, and the absolute game changer it has been to have that to do with them. Like, it has enriched my life and their lives, and it has helped me be a better parent. So I can't not put that in there. Is it my very favorite? No, but I would never get rid of it because of what it is doing for me and my family.
Of course. And Abby, what's your fourth choice for what you'd bring to the island?
Okay, so my fourth choice. We're going to get out of music now. I've had, a couple hours of listening to all of that. And like I said, I tried not to overlap too much, but how perfect that this one comes after what's my favorite series, because I cheated again. And I picked.
But to take the rules out again, Mike. I think we have to rewrite the rules in future for future guests, because this is on order.
We've written them six times now.
I know. Yeah, God Almighty. Abby has ruined this for us all together.
Okay, but I picked the Vulcan trilogy in season 4 of Enterprise, right? Because it really is one big story, and that's how I feel about the season 4 of Enterprise, and that's one of the reasons it resonates with me, is because they took. Going from the just general alien of the week, story of the week kind of thing, DS9 did that whole war arc, especially season 7. But then Enterprise tried to straddle the middle and said, well, we're going to do a bunch of mini arcs. And they were amazing. And this is, they knew they were on their last breath. They knew they were on their way out. They got to do what they wanted to do. And when they did, it was amazing. We got these incredible stories that really connected. They took the time to be able to tell them the way that they needed to be told, because they could have done all of these as one episode or even two-parters, but they wouldn't have been as good. And this one in particular, first of all, you've heard me say, I love the Vulcans. Like, I love their aesthetic. I love their society. I love how they comport themselves. And do I agree with them all the time? No, but I find them absolutely fascinating. And even just looking at these episodes, it fills my heart with joy, because there's all of the beautiful tapestries and candles. Their chairs in their embassy look Vulcan. Like, the care that is taken into presenting Vulcan society in this trilogy, and it's not always presented positively, but it's presented precisely and beautifully. And you can see the step. Yes.
The Vulcan script is so beautiful, isn't it? It really is.
Ready?
It's gorgeous.
That's my water bottle. So as I hold up my Vulcan script.
What is yours?
I also infinite diversity and infinite combinations.
Live long and prosper.
There you go.
This was a gift.
It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. Vulcan, everything Vulcan-y is pretty. And for as precise as they are very big in how they look and how they present themselves. They are into the whole Vulcan-ness of everything. Their monastery series even connect to their modern shuttles. You can see all that. People think and care about the Vulcan culture. And Vulcans got a lot of crap in Enterprise. Some of it very deserved, right? But I really liked, as someone who always, like I said, resonated with Vulcans, with the less emotional, that kind of aspired to have some of that control and calm in myself, I liked the Enterprise Vulcans. I liked seeing that they're not perfect. They're growing, they're developing, they're making mistakes. They have different people within their society, different factions, different ideas, just like everybody else. Yeah, maybe they were in space before us. They warped down. They made first contact with us, but that doesn't mean that they don't still have room to grow and learn and expand and change. And any society that stays stagnant is not going to survive. So I loved seeing this. And these three episodes, I mean, we get everything with the Cyrenites. We get everything with T'Pol and her mom. We get Archer thrown in there holding the Katra of Sarak. Like, come on now. This is, you can't get much more Vulcan-y. And we see a Vulcan bad guy, which doesn't happen as often as one would think with as much as we see Vulcans. And he's bad, but for reasons he does not feel are nefarious. Like, and that's something to think about too, because there's so much division in the world today. And to see that in other places helps us reflect back and discuss and marinate on what we have going on now. And I mean, they just really did this one up. Plus we get Saval and Shran doing big, huge things that we have seen being set up since the very beginning of season one. Like, if you would have said at the beginning of season one how much you're going to love Saval and how much he is going to be in humans' corners by the end of it, everybody would have thought you were crazy, because that was not who we saw. But in this episode, he goes against his own government. He admits that he's a melder. Like, this is showing how many layers of people you think you have figured out you don't know about. And that is a valuable lesson too. There's so much more to people than what you know and see, even if you've been around them for a long time. And the death of Admiral Forrest hurts my heart every single time, but I think it was so needed as a catalyst for what comes next in these episodes and then the rest of the season, that bravo to Von Armstrong for really making us care about that character and for not being a bad admiral, for being a good admiral, which we don't see enough of either. And he's the one telling Saval, I want us to do joint missions. I want us to be coming together. Look at this trust. And to see the relationship between those two men, those two minor characters getting fleshed out. And then later on, seeing Saval do the same thing with Shran. And that torture scene in there when he's torturing him and he doesn't want to be, like, these are not our main cast, but we love them, we respect them, and we learn so much about them in the founding of the Federation being really because some of these characters and the respect that they have earned and grown into because of the humans. It's like magic. It's seeing the sausage get made, but it's okay because all the parts are really good. And I love that Trip is standing up to them. He has really come into his own. He can command now. You see why he was chosen to be on this ship. He's past the big-eyed Southern boy. He's past the, oh my God, I'm living in PTSD and trauma. He is coming into his own, and it's beautiful and it's amazing and it's bold, and I love it. And everybody gets stuff to do in these one, even Travis. So that's just the sprinkles on top, because oftentimes Travis is forgotten, but man, he gets to fly that ship. And we get the little humor of him and Malcolm talking about how Malcolm is still sometimes space sick. He still gets motion sick. This is the crew I love. This is them coming together after all these years and missions. And it's that next step in the process, and it's just perfect. I mean, you can watch all three of these back to back, and it feels like you've only been watching TV for half an hour because you get so absorbed into it. And awesome, awesome, awesome costumes throughout the whole thing, throughout every little bit of it. And I love costumes too. Vulcan costumes, fantastic. Vulcan desert outfits, awesome. I like Archer's little desert coat that he loses pretty quickly, but it's just the most Vulcan of Trek to me. These three episodes. It's very condensed Vulcan, and it's perfect.
So, moving on.
Oh, what my goodness.
Your favorite movie?
Okay, this is the one that I put in there. Yeah, there's a story. Because I have to say, and people are going to all shake their heads and be like, really? But it's Generations. I really, really like Generations. Do I think it's the best movie? No, but it's my favorite. Because I love the feelings. I love seeing the D on the big screen. Lighting and changes, you know, aside. It was magic. It was also the first Star Trek movie I got to see in the theater. Like, I didn't drive at this time. I was a kid. Like, I was under the mercy of other people. And I was so moved and so excited and so into it. I got adults to drive me to the theater three times while it was out to watch this movie. And every time, I just remember being so absorbed. And the Nexus was gorgeous. Stellar cartography blew my mind in the theater. I remember, I'm like, again, 13, 14, and just sitting there going, I want to live in this. And I'm also the person who goes to the planetarium and just wants to lay there and let them move the stars around. Like, that's what I want to go to the planetarium for. So that was stellar cartography. And then that scene between Data and Picard in there about having emotions and not wanting emotions, obviously you're seeing a theme in the Trek that I feel here. That really resonated with me. And I loved that they brought Kirk back. I don't like the way that they killed him off, but I appreciate he came back. He passed the torch. I kind of already knew that he was going to die because I got that soundtrack before the movie. Didn't listen to it, but the track is called Kirk's Death. And you're like, put that on the CD.
I think they might have given away a possible spoiler there in the name of the soundtrack.
Exactly. But I will say that that cut is one of my top five Star Trek music cuts too. It's gorgeous. Yeah. But that movie, it sits in a special place in my heart, probably because it is the first big screen one I saw, probably because it was that passing of the torch. It was TNG, which had founded my love of Trek, moving on to its next step in its journey and seeing everything bigger and better. There was the humor in it. I still enjoy Worf getting the plank taken away and falling. Like, there's all of that. And it just, it makes me feel good to watch it. Like, I enjoy the whole thing. I love that they brought back the cameos. I love that we all joke about Tuesday now. You know, there's a thousand things. We got to see Guinan's quarters, which was also very cool. And it can technically be a Christmas movie because Christmas is in this movie. So
that's right. That's
my rule. And I watch it every Christmas season just because, you know, it's kind of a Christmas movie.
I like that. I'm going to steal that. That's going to be my new favorite Christmas movie. There we go.
Well, you know, you can also watch Spock Amok because La'an does mention Christmas in there. True. So
true. That are we just saying any Star Trek mention of Christmas now instantly becomes a Christmas thing? Is that what we're saying?
Yep. I will take that.
Discovery Season 5 writers, you need to mention Christmas.
Or Prodigy, you know.
Or Prodigy Season 2.
Yes, of course, yeah.
Could you imagine Rock Talk giving everybody gifts?
Oh, with a little Christmas hat on. Oh, okay, we need to see
Murph.
Hageman Brothers, make like it happen.
A tilted, no. Murph's little, like, doodad thing on top of his head becomes a mistletoe. And everybody has to kiss Murph.
You've thought about this way too much.
I'm not a great sleeper. This is the kind of stuff that goes through my head in the middle of the night.
4 o'clock in the morning, and why can't I sleep?
Yeah, because I'm thinking about Murph with the mistletoe thing.
I'm with you on that one. So
I'm going to make that happen and send you guys pictures. I got, 6 weeks now to make that happen?
That'd be awesome. I'll put that as my Christmas. That's for my family's Christmas card this year. It's going to be Murph. And they're going to look at this and go, what the hell is this? Well, story. So what is the next item on your desert island list?
Okay. So as I'm thinking through, I'm stuck on a desert island, right? And I need to have different things for different moods because being stuck on a desert island is not going to be the easiest thing. I'm definitely going to have some ups and downs. My emotions are going to kind of run the gamut. And sometimes you just need a good catharsis. You just need a good cry. You just need to let it go. And so I'm thinking to myself, okay, there's definitely episodes of Star Trek that I can put on that let me get get those feelings out. And which one of those do I want to watch over and over again while I'm stuck on this desert island, possibly for the rest of my life? And there were a couple contenders, but it comes down to The Visitor from DS9. And I know this makes so many people's lists, and it should. And it's one that I always find, and I was just talking to my husband about this morning, that what I took with me to the island isn't necessarily the same list that I would say are my favorites, because I was trying to be smart about being on the island and giving myself what I might need. And that's this. And this one is, I mean, we could talk for hours and not say all of the wonderful things that happened in this episode, but deep down in its core, this is a story about a parent and a child and their deep love and connection to each other. And I remember feeling that as the child when I watched it in, you know, I was in high school at that point, but I remember feeling how powerful that was. And I watched it with some friends, and I cried. I'm not ashamed, but I remember going home and hugging my parents after I watched this episode, because like you just feel it. It's that I love you more and in different ways than I can possibly say. And I am willing to change time for you. And that kind of goes back to, I read Imzadi by Peter David when I was in middle school, and it kind of became the foundation for what I wanted my romantic life to be, someone who's willing to change time for me, which is a completely unrealistic expectation. But
wait a second, why is it completely unrealistic, Abby? I think your husband needs to answer that question to be perfectly honest.
Well, I don't know that I feel like I am essential enough to change time for. I great that he'd be willing, but like, please, I think there are other people who might be more key to the future of humanity than I am. I'd appreciate that in your world that's different, but you know, you have those relationships. There are people in your life, both who you find romantically and friendship wise, and hopefully for most people, someone in your blood family that you would be willing to change time for, that you would, you say, you know what, no matter what, I am taking care of you. I am protecting you. And when I became a mother, it was about 2 days after I brought my first daughter home. And I realized I had a different kind of love for her than I did anyone else in the entire planet. And that I, when they say, oh, mama bears, I didn't know what that meant until I had my own and went, I would do anything for this little being. Like, even if my husband, is it your husband or your baby? I'm really sorry, but it's my baby. And like, and he gets that and he's cool with it. And he would say the same thing in reverse, right? Like it's my baby. I have this deep, just powerful love that came so strong. And you see that in the performances in this episode. Like, one of my favorite moments is when old Jake wakes up and Cisco's just sitting there. Oops, sorry, I bumped my mic on that one because I did the Cisco position. But like, he's just sitting there watching old Jake, loving him. Like, the amount of emotion and love and protectiveness that just radiates at that moment, that you are my kid and there is nothing more in the entire universe that I love than you, is right there in that moment. And like, bravo to Avery Brooks for his performance. Bravo to Tony Todd and Sirach Luft. Bravo for everyone in this episode for going there. I cannot imagine how exhausted and raw they must have been coming home every day, because it really does not hold back. And then the end of this episode, when everything's resolved and, you know, Cisco doesn't get zapped and he gives Jake that hug. That is probably one of my favorite hugs in the entire franchise, because it is just pure love. And like, the voices are breaking and the actors are like going into it. And you've got Sirach having to play, I don't know what's really going on here, but okay, yeah, Dad, I love you too. And oh, it's just perfect. And when I'm on a desert island and I need to cry, or I'm missing my girls, or I need to feel that connection, this is what I'm going to watch.
And I think as well, what's great about the end of The Visitor is it doesn't outstay its welcome. Like, the episode ends and that is it. You're out, you're gone, you're done. That's it. There's no explanations. There's no expository dialogue. They're totally kind of finishers. Now, Abby, next question. Now, I'm pretty sure you're going to give us lists about 4 miles long for this. So I'm going to actually change the rules mid-game. And
Oh,
I'm going
no.
to say for the next one, you're only allowed to pick two because you've actually
Okay.
picked about 100. So in
I
terms
pick
of
one
your,
from everything.
you've
Yeah.
been, in terms of your favorite episode, what would you say? Which is obviously the worst possible question you could ask anybody of the 869 current episodes of Star Trek that are out there. Which is your favorite?
I even wrote in your questionnaire, this is mean. Because it is.
Of
So,
course it is. Totally mean.
I know. And it's not the same as asking what I'm taking with me, like I said. So,
Yes.
okay. I'm gonna pick two, and I'm gonna pick two. Okay. So I'm gonna talk about Parallels from TNG, right? I love this episode. I absolutely love this episode. Again, I think having been 13, 14-ish when this came on, the idea of having like all these branching multiple realities kind of blew my mind. It was the first time I'd encountered that. I know it's kind of tropey since then, but it wasn't for me then. And I thought it was just incredible. And I like Worf. Would I ever put him in my top characters? No, but I appreciate him. I love the world building. I love his story, his arc. I mean, so much of Star Trek is about Worf, right? And like things tangential to Worf. But this might be my favorite Worf episode. Like, I really enjoy watching him figure this out, understand, see more possibilities. It's good for Worf. And he remembers Alexander, which is always a bonus because it's not always true.
The child that he just randomly forgets that he happens to have. Oh,
Yeah,
yeah, that one.
yeah, yeah. But I was never a huge Worf and Troi fan, but this episode, I believed it. And it's not like I hated it. I just would rather she had ended up with Riker. Glad that she did. Like I said, Red Imzadi, it founded how I wanted romance to be. But I believed them here. And I liked seeing the different layers of that relationship. I like them referring to, having Lwaxana as his mother-in-law and his face. Like Worf plays comedy in this episode. He plays aggressive. He plays sad. He plays professional. He plays Klingon. I mean, pick your flavor of Worf. You have some of it in this episode. And I really liked that. And I liked when we got to see all those Enterprises at the end and all the different ways. And of course, there's ones where they didn't rescue Picard from the Borg. Of course, there's universes where bad things are happening. Of course, there's universes where there's Wesley and everybody around. Like, this is amazing. This is amazing. And it's, again, a very self-contained story. Like, if you look at it from an actual writing point of view, it progresses really well. It's very even throughout. There's enough that the first time through you're confused, but not too confused. And then the rest of the times through you're noticing all the little things and going, haha, which makes you feel kind of in on the joke, which is always fun too. And I just really, I this one, if you have to say what's your favorite episode of TNG season 7, it's this one. If you have to say what's your favorite episode of TNG in general, it's probably this one. It's not, again, not the best, but it's the one that I will always watch. I can always go back to. I throw out stupid quotes all the time, like, oh, the Battle of Haras, right? Like, or 285,000 hails. There's a very niche population that get that, but it's still fun. And I really just think this is a great bite of TNG. And again, lots of little things that those of us who love it appreciate that the people who love it also wrote this episode.
And what's your other episode then from your list of 800 million that you were going to pick? But I'm going to reduce it to
Yeah,
two.
I know. Let's talk about those old scientists because it's modern, right? And look at you're both smiling when I say that, because how do you not smile when you think about this episode and talking about a love letter to Trek by people who know and appreciate and understand? And this is another one I watch with my girls a lot, and they have not seen Lower Decks. They are too young. They're not ready for that yet. But they've seen me. I've got T-shirts, and they've seen him on this, and they call it the Boimler Show. They're like, "Oh, are you going to watch the Boimler Show tonight?" And I'm like, "Well, it's not really the Boimler Show, but it is to them." Like, and that's so fun. But I loved that this episode feels both like a Strange New Worlds episode and a Lower Decks episode. How did you do that? Like, when we had, I mean, there were so many discussions for so long. Once we heard about this, we're like, yeah, this has the potential to be really good or really bad. But it turned out to be perfection. Like, everything about this episode is amazing. All the little things, the way that Jack Quaid and Tawny Newsom brought these characters to real life, it was joyous the whole time. I mean, Boimler does his Section 31 walk in the background at one point. He runs like he's animated. Like,
and
there are
don't
just...
forget Riker.
Oh, yeah. That is possibly my favorite part of that episode. It's obviously so good. What is it? Heroes and Villains made a picture of the saddle, and yep. It has a little hidden Riker on the bottom. Yep. So
it's the fact that the bit I loved about that is when Uhura goes, what? Oh, don't worry.
I know.
And well, then we find out the whole thing was improvised.
Yeah,
well.
Just I like, know. Oh. Just, oh. Well, there's so much talent on both those casts. And we are so blessed to be getting the gloriousness that is these two shows right now. And to put them together, it's amazing. And all the little throwaway lines. I mean, Mariner, and I love Tawny Newsom, and I hope some of these, again, were just the improvised that they left out. When she's talking about, ooh, ranks on your sleeves, I don't know about that. And it's like literally off screen under her breath. Those things are so funny. But it also has that speech that Boimler gives to Pike about, you know, be with the people who you love and your friends while you can, because they will be the ones who will be wishing they had more of you. And that, wrapping all that around, I mean, Pike knowing his fate is a big old serious downer. And to reference it in a scene like that, where it doesn't bring it down, it instead fills you with kind of like that love and happiness and hope. And to even see that Mariner, of all people, when she's geeking out over Uhura, it's beautiful, because everybody needs people like that in their lives. Oh, yeah. And you need to have those, that hope, those role models, those people who inspire you. I mean, Una's on the poster. The poster is in cartoon. Like, this is, it's amazing. And like I said, I watched this with my daughters, and they, one of them is really an Una fan and one of them is really a Uhura fan. And this episode boosts that for both of them. And they see in their those role models too. So what else could I ask for a funny episode that is deep into Trek lore, that stands on its own, but it has heart and role models and inspiration? Yep, it's up there.
And it was just so well done. I mean, I loved the opening credits. I loved the ending scene where they animated it. It was just done really, really well. And yeah, it's definitely one of my favorite episodes.
And Abby, what is your next item for the Desert Island? Oh no, we've lost Abby. Abby is having a complete allergic reaction to the question.
No, that would be me having ice water so I can keep talking and choking in my own ice water. So go me. All right. So my next one, flipping back to my screen. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about me watching Trek with my daughters. And this was one that also fell on my favorite episodes list, and it's Time Amok from Prodigy. I love this episode, and this is by far the episode of Modern Trek that I have watched the most, because my younger daughter also loves this episode and will watch it every chance that I let her. Like, it is, it's probably up in that we've watched it 50 times. Like, it's so good. And first of all, I'm a sucker for a good, like, weird timey-wimey kind of episode. I really like them. I think they're fun. I think it makes you think outside the box, which I really appreciate. I love that every character gets focus time in this episode. Everybody gets a little bit, even Murph. Even Murph has a couple moments in here that, yeah, okay, not so helpful when they're actually in the sine wave of time. But later on, when Murph falls from the ceiling into the hug, you can't ask for a better Murph moment. I mean, and my girls cheer every time. They're like, because right down like that, everybody gets a focus. You get to see Janeway in like her most Janeway-ness. She's inspiring them, she's leading them, even starting back on the holodeck where she's making them do the fox and the chicken and the grain thing. You see her as a teacher, but then as a leader, and then as a helper, and then as a scientist, and that's awesome. And then again, Rock in this episode. Oh, like I love Rock Talk in general. Like I think she's a non-traditionally sized young female scientist. Yes. So much yes for that. And she has so much heart in her. I mean, when she's on the holodeck and she's playing the Glitter Sparkles Veterinarian School, right? Like, that's my girls. That's who this character is written for. And for them to see her pull herself up, do it on her own, teach herself what she needed, and then reach out when she needed more. That's what I want my girls to do in life. That's what I want. That's what I want everybody to be able to do. Like this, what a role model right there. And to still at the end of it have that innocence and heart and love there. I mean, it changed her, but it didn't break her. And that is so cool to see. And the fact that, you know, there's all these little throwaway lines in here about how much these kids are starting to mean to each other. Like right before Zero explodes, he says, "I wish I could tell everybody how much," boom. Like that's a big admission right there. You know, Dal comes to some big realizations in this one. Jankum wants to eat the chicken or eat the fox, which is so funny to me. But he, you see him and how he's growing in this one. And Gwyn to realize how long Rock must have been alone and to go talk to Janeway about it. Like, Gwyn is, I can't wait to see what they do with her next season because she has the potential. Like I was saying, I don't want to judge characters till their stories are done, but her story has the potential to be absolutely amazing and put her higher and higher up into my rankings. And
I think
again,
what you're saying, Gabby, is that there's a like that scene where Gwyn has that conversation with Janeway about how long, you say, Rock was kind of on their own. It's really kind of, you know, brilliantly countering, but like with the celebration on one side of the room,
yeah.
and then this kind of conversation at the other side of the room. So you kind of you get both. You get the kind of the like how long was the isolation and how like how kind of, you know, what that must have felt like, but you still have the celebration going on the other end of the room. And it's such a smartly written kind of scene as well.
Yeah, I agree. It's the episode is, you know, what, 23 minutes when you take out both sets of credits to get the amount of story and science in here, and then you get that like tiny little kid-sized cliffhanger ending of Dreadnought's eyes just popping on. Perfect. Perfect. Like the first time we watched it, I remember my older daughter, it cuts right there and she goes, "Oh, come on." And I'm like, "Yes, you found the first thing that makes you yell at the TV." So it's just a perfect episode. And if I'm stuck on a desert island, this is one that you can watch. And again, I'm gonna feel like my girls are there with me, and I'm going to get that heartwarmingness, but that good sci-fi bite in there too. So it's gotta come with.
This is a tough question, and you haven't put an answer down for it.
Ooh, I emailed it later.
Oh, okay. It's not in my
Oh, you did. That's right. My apologies, Abby. That's right. I actually left it out intentionally because I actually wanted to surprise Mike with the answer.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So, what moment defines Star Trek for you?
Okay. And I didn't mean to leave this out. I actually had thought about it. I was just, you know, doing 17,000 things at once. It's funny because it's not a moment that actually is in Star Trek. It's a moment that happened in my life. Like, so I've been talking a lot about how I watched Trek with my girls, and it's made such a difference. And it was such a difference in me growing up. It's my it helps with morals and ethics and all of those things. And I'm doing that with them. And they are watching Prodigy with me. They've watched other little things. But there was a series of videos that Paramount Plus put out after each of the Prodigy episodes where it was Kate Mulgrew, 1 minute long. They were talking about the lesson, the moral of the story, so we'll say. And we would always watch the episodes, and then we would watch that. And it's talking about, you know, keeping an open mind, being good to your friends, accepting apologies, you know, like all these little social emotional lessons for kids, right? And they're cool. And it's Kate Mulgrew. So of course they're amazing, right? And they sound great. And they put in little pieces from the episodes and they're a minute long. Didn't think much of it besides this is a cool companion piece. Until I heard my girls referring back to them when they didn't know I was listening. They were talking to each other about the lessons. They were quoting Captain Janeway, or the real Lady Janeway is what I believe they were calling her at that point. They were talking about, remember how she said we need to cooperate? Remember how she said we need to, you know, look for help, ask for help when we need it, kind of. What? Star Trek is helping me parent. Star Trek is helping me raise my kids. Like, Star Trek to me is a philosophy. It is almost a theology, you know? It's got that goodness, that hope, that all that baked in. And to see that in my kids and them referring back to it, that's what Star Trek means to me.
I love that.
As I get teared up over here.
No, don't, because if you do, I will. So what is your seventh item you would bring with you? Seventh thing, I should say, not item.
I am kind of cheating, depending how you count it, but not badly, because I picked...
Look, the rule book, Abby, like, you know, like, this was the rule book, right? It's just kind of, I'm going to throw it out the window as soon as I can now.
Well, okay, so on Paramount Plus, it counts it as one episode, right? So I picked All Good Things.
I'm agreeing with you, don't worry.
Yeah. This one is, it's one episode. It was presented as one episode. You should never break this up into two. Like, there's no points. And again, we've talked about how TNG is my comfort, right? Like, this is where I go back. This is where I feel at home. And this episode, it's a perfect series finale, in my opinion. Like, even in general, when you're talking about just TV, even prestige TV that we have now, this one hits it out of the park. This one nails everything. It's got the story, it's got the score, it's got the visuals, it's got the heart, it's got all the characters, plus some that you don't always get to see who are thrown in the mix to boot. It's easy to follow, but surprising the first time that you watch it. So, like, you're going along with it, and you're just like, oh, hey. And parts of it have continued to resonate for up until now. I mean, look at Picard season 3. It came from this. The last shot paralleled this because this is beautiful. This is our crew, our family, our captain. And you see that over and over and over again in this episode. And you get Q. I mean, there's always room for more John Delancey in my life because that man is wonderful in all that he does and says. It's another one that you'd kind of want to hang out with when you hear him talk, right? Like, he should write an autobiography. He's done a bazillion things. But this episode is just, I couldn't think how to really improve it besides maybe make it longer, which would probably not improve it because they'd throw something in I didn't like. But it's just good. It's just 100% good. It wraps up what you once wrapped up. It leaves open doors for the things that you want to still be left open. And I would rewatch it every day and be fine with it. So it's got to come to the desert island.
Brilliant stuff. Question for you then, Abby. In terms of, say, your podcast, obviously it's called First Flight, and your co-host, the lovely Chris, will be on with us as well at some point. Tell us about the podcast. What exactly is it about? And more importantly, where did the idea come from?
All right. Well, I have to credit back. We have a co-host emeritus, Melanie, who came up with the idea years ago, and she can't be with us now for some reason. She calls in from Columbia here and there, but she ended up talking to Jim Morehouse from Trek Ranks about how she wanted to start an Enterprise podcast because she was rewatching and really wanting to talk to somebody about it. And he said, you should talk to Abby. He hooked us up together, and we ended up having an accidental 3-hour first phone conversation because we just kind of flowed. And so we took some time, we looked into it, we realized that this was something that we wanted to do, we were committed, and started reviewing Enterprise every single episode starting from season 1. And as I said, Melanie had to step away for a little bit, so when season 2 came on, I got the absolutely fabulous Chris. Can't wait to listen to him make choices for this. And we are now almost at the end of season two, as we record this, Regeneration is going to drop. And we've got some really good fun stuff coming up. We have touched on a lot of the biggies and the hard ones, and you can come to us to find a love of all things Enterprise, but also a gentle nudge in, wow, this could have been better if. And that's okay, because one of the reasons I love Enterprise is that we are still talking about it and debating it and finding all those gray areas and connections to now. And it's been 20 years. And they just had an anniversary, which was also kind of a push for, you know, there's not a lot of Enterprise love out there. We've got the Shuttle Pod show now, which is fantastic, but not focusing necessarily on Enterprise. And there are so many layers and levels in that series, and I love finding them. And like I said, I love costumes. Enterprise has some incredible costuming work in there. And that is just been really fun to get to highlight and chat about. And Enterprise is full of food, and I also love Star Trek food. And man, some of the things that they serve on Enterprise have blown my mind. And Chef deserves every space food award that you could get, because the things they eat are incredible. And I bless Dorothy Deuter out there, who was their food stylist, because that has been a joy to get to throw out there and share into the universe too. Some of these niche things that I really find fun and exciting, and to find other people who are finding those fun and exciting right along with us. So we are called First Flight Pod. You can find us on all of your major podcast players. We drop every 2 weeks on usually Friday, sometimes Saturday, depending on how the internet speed is around here. And if you are looking for us on YouTube, we are part of the Tricorder Transmissions Network over there. You can also find us on pretty much every social. We try. There's a lot of them out there. I hope that when Twitter dies, we settle on something, because we're trying.
Oh, trust me, Abby, I know that pain. What is your eighth choice and your final choice for what you would bring to the island?
Okay, so the last thing that I'm bringing to the island is fun, because I have a feeling I'm going to need some just pure joy and some silliness and some laughs when I'm stuck on this island by myself for a long time. And there were a lot of contenders for this one, like, because there's a lot of Trek that is just fun and light. And sometimes I wish we got a little more of that in modern Trek. That's why I think Those Old Scientists really hits so well, because we don't get some of those just episodes that are meant to be mostly fun anymore. And so I picked Bride of Chaotica from Voyager, because
wait a second, Bride of Chaotica, this is absolutely the most bonkers one I've ever seen. I could ever think I could see on a list. I love it, but it's absolutely bonkers.
Well, okay, there's some pretty decent sci-fi around here. What would happen if we get aliens that, you know, only recognize life as photonic? Interesting concept. Yeah. And then, okay, costume nerd, right? I love the costumes. The costumes in this episode are perfection. And this wouldn't have worked if everybody didn't just go for it and play it up and ham it up and just choose scenery. And they did. And it was fun. And like I said, I live in a household when I grew up with my dad who loved just sci-fi, and we watched classic sci-fi, and like we go to Blockbuster, which was the video chain around here, and rent all those old black and white sci-fi movies, and they were like this. They were terrible.
Yes.
Yes. And but it's nostalgia to me too, you know, like it's like going back now and watching Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons. Like it's of its era, and they really stepped into it. And you can quote this episode to high heaven. There's so many. And like when you go, yes ma'am, his army of evil, and like that's fantastic, or remember, you're the queen. It's just it's fun. And if I'm on a desert island, I'm gonna want some fun. And this also has some really good kind of old-timey sci-fi music thrown in. I might not have that soundtrack, but I can still hear that and have my musical variety increase. So that's why it's coming to the island.
So Abby, sorry, go on, Mike.
I was gonna say, you're right about this episode. It is just that completely bonkers fun. And the bit that always gets me about it is how terrible Janeway is at acting.
Yeah.
And for an actress to act
to
Badly.
act
terribly. It just, and that just shows how great Kate Mulgrew
Perfect.
is. But yeah, it just how
Eye
terribly
rolling in
the
this is,
acting.
yeah, epic eye rolling in this episode. It's so fun.
I reckon they must have had a lot of fun making that episode.
And Abby, as we said earlier in the episode as well, you have a list of eight, but we're going to say if basically there was a fire or half the island was being flooded and you could only save one of the eight, what would you pick?
I'm gonna guess and see if I get it right.
Ooh, that's a good, that's actually a good point. I'm gonna try. I think I know what it might be. I'm not gonna say it because you have to say it, and you have to, and then me and Mike would see if we got it right.
It's so hard. Like I said, I have three other drafts of this list, but if I, oh, and I'm on the island alone.
Yes, that's the only one of them is going to survive.
Okay, I'm taking the Vulcan trilogy from Enterprise.
Oh,
I went for Time of Bach.
I was going with Subspace Rhapsody soundtrack.
Those were the other two that I was really considering. So those were my top three. But okay, first of all, it's lots longer. So that kind of tipped the scale a tiny
True.
bit, right? It's a lot longer. And I feel like it has most of the parts that I can't live without in it. So, but yeah, it was almost those other two. It was almost those other two.
We're going to run through some just other quick questions, and then Mike will lead you out with the very last questions we have. So in taking our cue from the great Nicholas Meyer, if we're sending off to the island, we'd send you with the collected works of Shakespeare and Sherlock Holmes. And if you were to bring one other book, what would it be?
The collected works of Nnedi Okorafor, who, if you don't know her, she's an African futurist writer, and she is writing some of the most progressive, interesting, like Afrocentric sci-fi out there that there's been. She also writes children's books, middle school books, and adult works. She writes novellas. Like her, she has wrote a novella trilogy called the Binti Trilogy, which is being adapted to HBO. Cannot wait because she is involved with it. I heard her speak live at a taping of LeVar Burton Reads in Chicago, and she blew me away. I got to meet her afterwards. The woman is incredible. She is everything you want somebody who's envisioning the future to be, and her writing is gorgeous. It's concise and precise. And if you have not read anything by her, go out there and start reading and start giving it to your friends. Because if you like Star Trek, you will love Nnedi Okorafor.
If you were going to the islands, well, Abby, what luxury item would you take with you?
So I've had seven knee surgeries because of reasons, but I'm taking a gigantic bottle of ibuprofen. Because I'm surviving on a desert island, right? I'm gonna have to build stuff, forage for food, like take care of stuff. My knees are gonna need to work, so like one of those like 3,000 ones of ibuprofen, that's coming with me.
And how would you handle the isolation of being on your own in the island? Like, is it something that you think you'd be able to do? Like, are you okay in your own company, or do you think you would kind of struggle without people around?
All right, so I don't mind being alone. I really need time alone. I crave time alone. So like that's not the part. I can keep my own company just fine. I would desperately miss my family. So that's the whole other side of that. And I sunburn in like, 5 minutes of sun. So I would need a heap ton of sunscreen. So if that instead of the ibuprofen, or I would need shade. So if it's not like a very sunny island, I would probably do better. But I think in this, if I have Star Trek to watch, obviously this is not the world's worst island. So I think I could hack it at least for a little while.
And how resourceful would you be, like, to forage, to build a hut or whatever it is? Like, are you kind of handy in that kind of regard?
I'm really short, so that is an issue. Like I can't reach a lot of stuff, but my family does a lot of tent camping, so I'm fairly decent with being out in the woods and like putting things together and knowing what to do if a storm comes up and you're out in the middle of nowhere. Like again, it depends on the island, what's the food kind of situation. Hopefully it's not just nuts, because that would be a very short
tree nuts
trip.
Anyway,
tree nuts, exactly. So, I mean, again, I think I'd be fantastic? No. Could I hack it for a while? Yeah, probably.
So food sources, it's targs. That's all there is, targs.
Well, they have tusks, right?
Yeah, I mean, once you kill one, you can make weapons. You've got these.
You've thought about this.
I'll hand the last question over to you, Mike.
So, I love this question. Abby Summer, what does Star Trek mean to you?
Hope is really the short answer. It means that there are people out there like me, who think like me, who want the world and the universe and the future to think like me. And I don't mean that in a us and them kind of way. I mean this in a let's go into this together kind of way. Let's make the best future. Let's build what we want our children's children to do. Let's reach for the stars, you know, Ad Astra per aspera, right? So it means somewhere to go to get what I need to be okay a lot of the time. It's joy, it's connected stories and lessons, it's ethics, it's morals, it's things that make me think bigger than myself. It's valuing science, and that questions sometimes are actually the answers that you're looking for, because they lead you to more things, and to never be afraid to stop learning and to stop reaching and to stop trying. And it means that I have an easy way to share things that are important with me with my girls, and to help them be part of this future that I hope to get to. And it's my tribe, you know. I've said that I'm talking to you because I throw out into the ether my thoughts about this stuff, you know, and to have met the people who resonate with me in this way has been really powerful and really nice as an adult too, to be able to, when you see the world and it hurts you, to know that there are other parts of the world and other people out there in other parts of the world that are resonating with you and working hard to make everything better. And that's what Star Trek means to me.
I love that.
Brilliant stuff, Abby. Thank you so much. I'd like to thank our guest, Abby Summer, for joining us on our show this week. I'd also like to thank our co-host, Mike Overton, as well. Abby, we are going to send you off to the desert island now, and thank you very much for joining us. Next week, guys, we'll be back with another guest for Desert Island Trek. Until then, live long and prosper.